Welcome to Amongst the Waves. I'm your host, Tanya Carroll, and I'm a surf coach, a Czech practitioner, and I'm completely caught up in all things surfing and getting behind the scenes of surfing culture. I have surrendered my soul to surfing. In each of the episodes of Amongst the Waves, I will bring you a perspective you might not have considered in the hope that it inspires you to be a better human and that it helps to build your stoke. On this episode, my guest is Taylor Cecil. Taylor is a Czech professional and a Czech holistic lifestyle coach. In his practice, Taylor takes a holistic approach to the coaching process, understanding that overall wellness is comprised of strength, nutrition, psychological health, and sleep. Specializing in corrective holistic exercise kinesiology, mental peak performance, and holistic lifestyle coaching, Taylor also shares his knowledge through speaking events and facilitating workshops. Along with his extensive knowledge, Taylor integrates his personal experience from being one of Australia's top triathletes. Taylor is a father of two young children and can currently be found coaching clients in Burleigh Heads on the Gold Coast and spending quality time in and out of the ocean with his family. Hi, and welcome to the Amongst the Waves podcast. Today I have with me a friend of mine who I don't actually think we've met face to face yet, but have known each other for a little while through the Czech program. Welcome, Taylor.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Tanya. Thanks for having me. Very excited to chat to you today.
Yeah, me too. I really have been looking forward to this one for a little while.
Yeah, awesome. So have I.
Who is Taylor Cecil? Tell me about yourself and tell my listeners about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I am a Czech coach, Czech practitioner, and I am a holistic health coach as well. So I'm working with all sorts of different people who are in pain or injuries, people who are professional athletes as well. Myself personally, I'm so into this work that, I'm on such a self-discovery journey at the same time. I'm running that parallel. I started off as being an athlete. As a little kid, my family was right into sport. My dad played NRL down in Sydney. And so I grew up playing lots of different sports. I was right into my rugby league, my soccer, surf life saving, and cross country at school. And then through that combination, I had a teacher say to me, hey, I think you should give triathlon a go. So at 16, I got right into triathlons and was picked up through different squads and certain institutes and turned into a professional triathlete.
Wow.
So that took me all around the world, racing in different locations and racing for Australia and living in Europe. I would do 6 months of the year in Europe racing and then 6 months back here in our Australian summer to race here as well. But during that journey, I developed chronic fatigue. Completely wiped myself out. And I would say that was one of the biggest blessings for myself now.
How old were you when that happened, Taylor?
That was when I was 19, 20. So during that time, I was kind of going through, the Western approach to chronic fatigue. And there wasn't really too many answers, but just rest. And I know that rest was important at that stage, but I also had a calling within myself to want to source more answers or get to know this issue a little bit more. Mm. And I came across a lady called Jan Carton. And Jan, for the listeners, has been coached under Paul.
Under Paul Check, yep.
And is just an incredible lady, such a beautiful soul, and has an amazing heart. And she taught me about so much more about myself. She handed me a book, my first book that opened me up into understanding energy, understanding spirituality. She handed me The 7 Spiritual Laws to Success by Deepak Chopra.
Very cool.
And as a 19-year-old boy who didn't have much, opening to these sides of things, found it quite fascinating to understand, you know, quantum science and certain laws of the universe and, you know, understanding energy, understanding ourselves. And it was just so eye-opening. And through that process, you know, Jan was helping me to understand myself more, understand what the concept of working in is all about. That I'd worked out so hard that I'd taken my body to the brink where it completely shut down and
burnt out.
Yeah, and completely burnt out. So I had to learn about what rebuilding my energy was. So she helped me with nutrition, understanding the gut. She helped me with my beliefs. You know, that's first and foremost what got me to chronic fatigue was my whole belief system, my mindset.
Yeah.
My mindset was so driven to do more, to action things that I had no level of resting and accumulation of energy to keep me balanced.
Yeah.
So I had to change how I thought about things. And she helped me do that as well. She helped me understand working in exercises and how to train properly. And from there, it was such a huge foundation of my training as a triathlete. And from there, I raced, you know, even better. I had podiums and wins in, you know, world stage races and just learned so much about myself that chronic fatigue situation helped me into what I do today and why I'm so invested in helping people in pain or athletes. You know, help them get to know themselves more and more.
I didn't know that about, I'm going to go back a little bit. I didn't know that you came from an NRL background. My family does as well. So I grew up in Canberra. My brother played for the Canberra Raiders.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Small world. Australia is a small place.
Yeah, that's right.
Jan Carton is a name that keeps coming up. And I think I'm going to have to send out an invite to Jan Carton to have her on the podcast as well, because she's a very strong connection to our Czech community and our Czech family. And so you trained with her as a client, and then did you go through her mentoring program?
Yeah, so I trained her with her as a client, and as I mentioned, continued my journey in triathlons. And 1 year was 2012. I was in a race in Japan. And I was coming out of the water. The swim is the first leg of a triathlon. And I was coming out. I had a great swim. I was leading the race. And I was taking off my goggles and I missed a step. And I didn't know at that time, but I'd broken my fourth and fifth metatarsal. I didn't know. I was so adrenaline-riven.
Yeah, you can't feel it.
Going in the race and did the bike leg and come off the bike and basically crumbled. My body gave way underneath me. I'd had two completely snapped bones there. So obviously couldn't do that run leg. But at that time, it was quite stressful. But I was flown home. I was due to do the European season and continue my journey for those 6 months that I was used to. But I came home and I had 6 months that I was like, what am I going to do? I can train back here at home, but there's also no races during the winter time. And I spoke to Jan and she said, hey, I'm just about to start a mentorship. And I thought, well, I know this is something I want to do in the future. Why not start it now?
Yeah, so Universe Provides.
I went through her mentorship and back then in 2012, I did my Czech exercise coach, now IMS1, under Susie Neville. And just was captivated, and again, another eye-opening experience in learning how to take people through this stuff. And I was a client and knew, you know, she coached me. So I knew about it and I'd done it. I've lived and breathed it. But now applying it to other people was another layer to it. So from there, through that, I started my business and I was coaching people one-on-one and also racing my triathlons and starting to merge that balance between work and racing. And eventually it got to the point of me going, okay, how much more out of the sport do I want versus, you know, what really feels like a calling to step into the coaching aspect to it. Have I really done everything I can with all that I know personally to get the best results as possible in triathlon? And I'd really gone against the grain of the sport.
Yeah.
The sport was still based off of the 90s with our coaching methodologies.
Yep. Keep pushing, keep pushing.
Keep pushing, yeah. So my approach was definitely against the grain, and but I'd gained that knowledge about that now. I'd gained that understanding of this approach, this balanced approach to it, and how powerful it was. So, yeah, I was very happy to then further step into my coaching and further develop my business and, you know, be with my partner and now two kids. So,
and where you are today.
Where I am today.
What's your first memory of surfing? Was surfing something that you did the whole way along, or was there, did that come much later?
No, first memory of surfing was during my years of surf lifesaving.
Yep.
You know, we'd be paddling our boards and then would ditch those after the Sunday events and grab the surfboards and go out and just spend all day in the ocean. So I'm definitely a water boy and
water baby.
Yeah, the early memories are around, yeah, like 7, 8, 9 years old.
Do you feel an affinity with the water, and do you feel that's different to being in nature that doesn't have water? So for hiking or in the mountains or in the snow, or is there something about the water that keeps drawing you back?
Totally. Yeah. You know, it's that they definitely have different feels to them, right? Both mm-hmm. are so very grounding in themselves. And the water to me is, or it's more of the feminine approach, right? You know, water is the feminine, and our land is more of the masculine.
Masculine, yep.
So the water for me was nourishing. And as I mentioned before, I was someone who was very, I was yang dominant. I was fire-based. Right?
Very much, yeah.
So the water was something that was cooling to me. So it brought me balance. And every time I was in the water, I was basically rebalancing myself. So
without even knowing you were doing it, I guess, at the time.
Yeah, yeah, without even knowing it, just feeling like, wow, I feel so at home here.
So. Yeah. With the Czech program, so we do the physical, which is what you mentioned before, the integrated movement science practitioner side of things, but then we do the holistic lifestyle coaching that you talked about as well. Mm-hmm. Did you have those both in combination when you started within the Czech program and when you started doing that mentoring, or did you do one side of it and then go into holistic lifestyle coaching?
I personally ran it really quite parallel mm-hmm. with each other. I learned that early, that the physical and the mental, emotional, spiritual aren't different.
Yeah.
That they are one, and that they come together, and through the Czech models, they merge at the top, right?
Yeah.
But we're constantly being coached on how they are together through the process and through the journey. But through Jan, I learned really early that they are one, and
to try and separate them is doing just an injustice, really, isn't it, to our overall health?
Yeah, yeah, totally. And there's situations where you have to compartmentalize things and understand, okay, this is the physical aspect, and to compartmentalize and understand the mental aspect, you know, like your own inner child or your own mindset and where that's at. But through that, you can start to merge and close that gap on being able to see the oneness between the two. So, yeah, my journey started really early. And as I mentioned at the start, when I got that book, that Deepak Chopra book, that opened me up. And so, yeah, it ran quite parallel. And in 2013 was when I did HLC1, so only a few months after my IMS1 course. So, yeah, I kind of started that early in the piece of my coaching.
Very close together. Can you remember the first time you did, it's the health and lifestyle overview questionnaire that we have in our questionnaires that we give to our clients as Czech practitioners. Can you remember, because on that we've got the list of the five most significant events in your life. And the reason we ask this for people who don't or haven't done that before, who are listening, who might want more understanding about what that is, it's we ask those questions so that we can see where the trauma still sits, unresolved issues within the body and within the energetic system, but also so that we can see and calculate with the HAQ that we do, where we look at the organ function, we can see in which area of the chakra system within the body, the basic chakra system, we need more attention. Can you remember those first, or what you put down as your most significant five events in your life that were trauma on that first questionnaire, first time you did it?
Yeah. So mine were based around very much relationships. Certain events for me, which were quite isolating. I remember being in my surf lifesaving, feeling quite separated from what was my tribe at that club. I was quite isolated from the rest of the group, of people my age. Made to feel very, very separate from that tribe. So,
were you actively trying to be part of that tribe and you felt like you were being excluded?
Yeah, actively trying to be a part of that tribe, feeling excluded. But I was also a very competitive kid. Mm-hmm. And, one of the stories that I share with some of my clients is that, I very early in the piece learned through my external environment, be it parents, peers, coaches, teachers, that the better I did at something, the more love I got.
Yep.
So very early in that piece was that, okay, if I did well at something, I got love. Mm. And, as we know, one of the deepest fears of the inner child is the fear of abandonment. Mm-hmm. So to avoid the fear of abandonment, I learned very quickly that do well at your sport, because you get praise from your peers, you get praise from my parents, I get praise from my coaches when I do that. So what I learned there in that early piece playing rugby league, I also learned that if I sort of fired up a little bit, got a little bit angry, then I'd do bigger tackles, I'd bust through lines, I'd score tries. And when I did that, I'd get the pat on the back from the peers. I'd get the applaud from the sideline.
Yep.
So I created this connotation between getting frustrated and receiving love. Yeah. And I through, our conditioning and that really embedding itself as a belief in a subconscious part of me, I would do that in other aspects of my life. So that was the birth of my competitiveness, competing for love at the core of it,
but
competing for the win at the surface of it. So I was an angry little kid. And if it meant that I had to beat my teammates and be the best even in my team environment, then that's what I was searching for as well. So I went through that early experience of feeling isolated, but ultimately and unconsciously, I was isolating myself.
Yeah.
So
moving away from what your true core value was, even though you didn't realize it at the time. So you were abandoning yourself or abandoning your authenticity.
Yeah, because a motivator for me out of fear was the fear of not being good enough.
Yeah.
So through that fear, I just had to be better. And if that meant isolating myself, then, let's do it, because it's this rock and a hard place between, well, at least I can like push to be the best. And if I do that alone, then so be it. Being the best is my highest priority, because I don't want to be seen as not good enough.
Mm.
So that was a very... that birthed this lone wolf type of mentality or energy about me. And not saying that that's, you know, a good energy, you know, or a bad. It just is what it is for me at that time. So I was a solo sort of guy because of that consciousness that I developed through those years. And, you know, I quickly had to learn that anger and frustration isn't going to, you know, to begin with, I had to learn that it wasn't going to serve me as a triathlete, because whenever I got angry, I'd just burn out like that.
Yeah, because you're using up so much energy.
I'd just zap up that energy. And yeah, I wouldn't have the energy to give at the end of a triathlon, which goes for 2 hours. So I was like, well, if anger's not going to work, how do I do this?
Yeah.
How do I get better at triathlon if my old ways of dealing with being competitive aren't going to work for me?
Yeah.
So that had to be a total rewriting of my consciousness, of my mind, as to how I'm going to approach this. And that's what I had to do. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to have met mentors to help me do that early in the piece, to help me work through that, see where it doesn't serve me, and, you know, be in a state of creation. You know, as a guy called Joe Dispenza talks about, you either live in survival or creation.
Yeah.
My anger was me living in survival, and my new ways of doing it, I had to totally think about, how did I want to do this? Because it's up to me.
Remap those brain pathways and those subconscious patterns, programming.
Exactly.
How do you think that has helped you with your coaching, and do you see that with clients on a regular basis, that kind of programming?
All the time.
Yeah.
Involved, you know, my we have chat sessions, nearly just as much as the physical, you know. So
yeah,
big part of my coaching now, because of what, you know, what I have experienced on both ends of it, what it feels like to be in the shadow and what it feels like to be in the light of it.
Mm.
So one of my core values as a coach is relatability. So if I can find any form of relatability, which we all can, because one of us is a human being, but whatever I find relatability within is the place that I can then share from in terms of my experience and what it's like to be able to transform or alchemize into, you know, a different mindset or a different mentality.
What demographic of people are you coaching at the moment? Because I know that you've got high performance surfing athletes and you've got high performance athletes as well. What range is that in relationship to, like, general public? Who are you coaching, without giving names if you don't want to?
Yeah, so I've on my current team have a few surfers, wakeboarding, running, triathlon, surf life saving. Previously I've worked with Olympic swimmers. From the athletic perspective, there's that, and then there's people who are in chronic pain. Back pain is a big one. Knee pain, you know, a lot of back and knee pain are a big thing in surfing.
Yeah.
So working on that level, and they're the main type of people who, if I could, you know, pinpoint the majority.
That's who you're working with.
So I'm working with. I'm at a stage now with, from this mental side of things, that I'm also working with CEOs and business people on their foundations of health and mindset as well. So I do take people down just that holistic lifestyle route, and not everyone sees me physically, but I've got both ends, basically.
Both ends of the spectrum. I'm going to ask about this because there's something that keeps coming up in interviews or in podcasts that I'm doing with people, and that's the idea around localism. And it's something that, on a very surface level, it looks like localism. But the reason I was asking you about the holistic lifestyle coaching, the things that you've gone through, is because I think on a deeper level, it's much more than what it seems to be at the surface, in terms of, it's not just about, and if you don't understand what localism is, it's about, on the surface, people who claim a surfing spot or an area as their own, and there's a pecking order and a hierarchy within that surfing group or the locals that go there. Do you think that, like I just said, that it is a much deeper thing and it is those archetypes coming into play and it is that fear of abandonment? Are any of those things that come up for you when you think about that?
Yeah, it's a good question, because there's such an intertwine of things. First and foremost, it's a tribal mentality. Mm-hmm. So a tribal mentality for people, it's like, you know, a tribal mentality is when we think a certain way and we don't realize that we're thinking it, we just think that way because that's how the tribe thinks, right? And if you grow up in a tribe or a tribal mentality, then you just do those things because that's what the norm is. And, mm-hmm. You know, the example here is that if you are growing up from a young age and you're a local at Snapper Rocks and you're, you know, your uncle or the people around you are frustrated and people that are in localism, then that's what you learn. That becomes your mentality. So, you know, the tribal mentality thing is a framework to it. And, you know, whether we like it or not, it's kind of having to shift with the amount of people into surfing now. If you still hold on to that old tribal mentality for your own reasons, you know, it's whether you like it or not, you're being faced with more and more people in the surf, and that could start to impact you. Mm-hmm. If you're the one within those mentalities, then, you know, that's your anger, basically. Yeah. And you're just being reflected what you hold inside of you via more people wanting to surf.
Holding up the mirror, right?
Yeah. So at a deeper core or psychological perspective, that's the I-ness of it, or what's held in the individual who holds that frustration or that anger about the situation.
Yeah. If you haven't heard that before, we talk about in the Czech program, and then all, and you go through those different stages of development socially and spiritually, well, more spiritually than anything. But
yeah, totally. You know, like if we look in a tribal mentality, you'd look at the I-ness, which is where do I stand in the tribe? And then you look at the we-ness, which is the togetherness of it. Mm-hmm. And if you understand yourself, then you have a better impact into the we. And if you have a better impact into the we, and so does everybody else's I-ness, then you have an impact into the all. It's the ripple effect.
Yep. And that all is universal rather than just tribal.
Yeah. 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 So you can broaden that analogy outward, which is really cool.
Do you experience localism? Like, have you been to breaks where you've been like cut off or told that you shouldn't be there because you're not a local? And how do you deal with it if you have?
Yeah, I mean, I personally haven't.
Wow.
You know, it's not something I get involved in. My analogy for that is that I don't feel it's worth the warrior being on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Situation. You know, if my warrior comes up, and to me it's a personal way to look inward about what I'm holding inside of me. If it crosses a physical boundary or there's boundaries being crossed, then yeah, totally they would be called out. I would call that boundary, you
know,
in however way that I would see fit. But you know, dealing with it is something that can be different for each one of us.
And I guess, like you said before, where you're coming from to start with will play a part in how you perceive that and the end result too.
So if you're
that thinking that you own the joint and that you've got right of way, all that sort of thing, you're already coming in with an attitude that probably will potentially bring up those things.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the deepest, just to go deeper on the concept again, is that if you're triggered by something, then again, that's, you know, that's something you've got within you. There are rules to surfing too, though, right?
Right.
A certain break. Ultimately, if it runs in a way that's in a linear order of things, then, you know, beautiful. And if everyone's co-creating with that order, then that's a functioning group.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're constantly being, you know, cut off or dropped in on, then that's a moment to call a boundary, right? Or
right.
To call it out. But how you call it out, how you choose to do it, is kind of the next step.
Yeah, and probably if it's happening in on a repeated basis at different places that you surf at, then you have to look at, is it them or is it me?
Yeah.
Is there something that I'm not recognizing within that break, that there's a pattern that I'm not following because I'm not taking the time to step back a little bit and look and learn before I get into the water?
Yeah, exactly. That's so incredibly important, right?
Right.
If someone, you know, you had a form of localism, which was like, you know, look at yourself in terms of the lineup of the queue, that's more of a boundary than it is maybe localism.
Right.
Right, because it's like, hey, there's an order out here that we're trying to function in.
Yeah.
And it's just an agreeance that everyone should know that. Some people learn that the hard way. Some people, you know, learn through their observations of understanding it too. So
right.
That comes into play as well.
I'm going to jump around to athletes. How does the mindset of an athlete, so we're talking about people who are really competitive and doing it as a profession or potentially want to do surfing as a profession, how does, is their mindset different to that of the general person? Like, are there attributes or values that they have that you can see when they come to you that are different from the average person? Like, what makes someone high-end athlete versus just the average athlete?
Yeah.
In terms of their psychology.
Yeah, totally. You know, firstly, just like you would with anyone, it's important to get to a why.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding your why behind something is important because it's your driving force. Your why and your dream is important because it's what takes you and propels you on that journey. It's what motivates you and energizes you to work in that direction, to take those steps towards winning an event or being on top of the podium, whatever that may be.
Mm.
So getting to somebody's why is important. And to answer your question of what differentiates a general person versus that high-end athlete, is that their why has so much to do with how they express themselves physically. You know, the why of wanting to understand my potential as an athlete, wanting to push the boundaries or the potentials of whatever my sport is, to expand and move into new realms of what is capable for the human body, what's capable of me, and how does that help to bring motivation behind what is also capable for others as well? That is a beautiful creative driving force that comes from the love of something. Now, not every athlete gets to that understanding.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope to do with my athletes, is get to that why, get to that purpose and to that dream. But, you know, people like Roger Federer or Gabriel Selassie, or, you know, people breaking marathon world records, or, you know, constant gold medals, those top end of those athletes, if you really tune into their part of their purpose, those are the guys that don't hold that aggression of competitiveness, yet that inner warrior for themselves. and wanting to push their potential and be able to be a representation to others as well. That's what I see as that pinnacle top piece when it comes to competitive sport.
Do you train juniors, so younger athletes as well?
I do. Yeah, I've got a working with that, like entering into that professionalism of the sport.
Yeah,
that's that sort of age mostly. Like, if I do have a younger athlete, that's sort of 17, 18, 19, definitely. I do have a little 12-year-old that I work with. Little Ralph is one of my favorite clients.
Very cool. Do you see that same drive in the kids?
They're figuring it out, right?
Right.
No, a kid is developing their understanding of what their ego is, which means that they're developing an understanding of how do I do this? How do I approach it? You know, I mentioned in my story that my ego was driven from wanting to be the best, more so out of fear.
Right. Yeah. Because you were fearful that you would lose love if you didn't have that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that made me a really friggin' good athlete.
Yeah.
But to what point was that going to not serve me anymore? So, you know, at that young age, you don't necessarily have it figured out in that sense. You know, the idea is very much behind what the top end athlete's life looks like.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much behind, you know, wanting to be on top of that podium and wanting to experience what it's like to put energy into something and visualize being that person with a gold medal or with crossing that line and crossing that tape. You know, that's more so I see the motivation behind the younger person rather than, yeah, having it all figured out in what the ultimate, you know, pushing potential, you know, a young athlete hasn't fully embodied their we-ness in that I, we, all that we discussed. They're still in their I-ness. You know, in spiritual terms, the soul hasn't fully anchored until like 28, 29, 30.
Yeah.
And what that means is that you're still figuring out how to use your ego before those ages. So that's what they're developing. But I mean, the earlier you get into a young athlete's mind in a positive way about their approach and how to do things and how to approach things, then the more framework they have to work towards their goals and their dreams out of love rather than fear.
Right. We talked a little bit before about balance in terms of holistic health, spiritual, mental, physical, and emotional. How do you encourage that in all of your athletes, as well as like young ones, as well as old ones? Like, what do you, like, if someone is so focused on the physical and so focused on the winning, how do you bring in that the dream can encompass other things as well?
So, in terms of
having balance within life, so not just being what we sometimes see, particularly I think what we will see coming up in the next few years in terms of surfing being now, and I'll talk about surfing a lot, but because it's an Olympic sport now, how do we encourage children, young athletes, older athletes, that it's not that there is life after that, like that they are more than just the athlete?
Yeah, totally. I think to begin with, it's understanding that health is your foundation to your performance. If you don't have your health, you don't have your performance. So if you want to have the goal of winning a race, then you need the foundation of health. Now, to me, that helps to educate into other dreams or other aspects of your life as well. because if you have a dysfunctional relationship at home, then that's going to impact your performance. But your relationship is a part of your health. Relationships are a part of your, in the Czech model or Paul's words, a part of your doctor happiness.
Absolutely.
So if your relationship in this example is impacted, then you're not going to perform as good as you could. One of the things that got me to that chronic fatigue was also my studies in year 12, but also being in a relationship at that point and that relationship breaking up. Coupled with overtraining and so on and so forth. So my overtraining wasn't just the fact that it took me to chronic fatigue. There are other stresses, other physiological loads involved in it.
Where you were burning out in those other areas. You were burning out physically, but those other areas, there were fires as well.
Relationship, mental stress, study stress, chemical stress from a nutritional perspective, physical stress because of injuries and the demand of my training. So there were so many different stresses that came into play to my performance. So it's important to discuss these goals outside of sport because they impact your ability to achieve that potential in sport.
Yeah.
So to talk about a healthy functioning relationship at home or having goals as to the environment you want to be in, having goals when it comes to your habitual behaviors around food and things like that, all come into play. It's all one. If you want to be a better athlete, and just sort of diverting you here, a little bit here, Tanya, but I'm also working with like CEOs as well, and they're high performing people too.
Absolutely.
But they need,
and just as driven as athletes.
Yeah, but they also need health as a foundation to their performance as well. So setting goals outside of that is important totally, you know, no matter who you are. I sit down and talk with my little 12-year-old client, Ralph, all about what his school goals are, you know, because I see how much importance that has to his ability to swim well or do motocross really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In terms of where the WSL has taken or is going with its, where they're, next year they're having the Challenger Series as well as having the Qualifier Series as well as the Championship Tour, that then widens the scope of people being able to go, not necessarily go into it, but gives them, I think, surfers on the tour or athletes on the tour, a wider scope of being able to perhaps potentially reach that high potential because there's more opportunity for them to compete. Mm. In a COVID world, and this came up yesterday, but it came up again this morning. It was one of the athletes, Gabriel Medina, revealed that he isn't vaccinated, which is why he isn't competing in Tahiti. The next, I think, two events he's not competing in. How do you see our ability to move around the world, I guess I would say, changing the way athletes and the way we coach people, like how does that long-term, how is that going to impact on, or how do you see that impacting on the way we train as athletes?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's so surrounded by unknown territory, right? Whether, you know, whatever you choose to do as an athlete and how that impacts you on being able to move around and go to different locations. You know, that's so such unknown territory as to what that's going to look like in the future. It can definitely be a big impact. During this time, no doubt have there been athletes that their dreams have been shaken up.
Mm.
You know, not being able to travel and not being able to go to events, races, whatever. And
or if they choose to do that, they're going to be away from family, which is one of, I'm guessing, well, one of my highest values as well, like when we talk about Dr. Happiness. So their impact on choosing to do that takes on a significant different perspective.
Yeah. And now more than ever, the importance of understanding yourself is vital.
Yeah.
Because, and probably to answer this question, Tanya, is that because of this whole situation, you do have to know yourself more. What do I mean by that? Well, my personal definition of success is getting to know myself, because the more that I know why I make the choices I make, the more optimal choices I can make relative to my dream. But if I don't know myself, then I will be in such a divide about things. Do I? Don't I? What do I do? Do I go? Do I not? And that divide is created because there needs to be a deeper understanding to your dream, to your core values, to what is heart related in you, what you want to experience, what you want to have a drive and work towards. Because until you know that, will you know how to be a decisive person? The definition of decision, or from in its Latin terms, is to cut off. So to make a decision means that you cut off other possibilities and you work towards what it is that you know and want. But you can't do that unless you know yourself.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting to here is that first and foremost, how big of a dream is it?
How important is it to you?
How important is it to you? Is it worth being away from your family, or, you know, how much support do you receive from that to go and chase that dream? For me, I had such supportive parents where I would go away for 6 months every year.
Yeah, it's a long time for a young kid.
Yeah, and I did that at 18, and that was a huge, I did it solo by myself, 18, 6 months, lived in Germany, different language, didn't, you know, had to learn the language, had to get by.
It was feed yourself.
But the dream was big enough.
Yeah.
To want to do that. The dream was big enough to step through those fears to want to do it. So if the dream is big enough, then, you know, you find a way, basically. And so that's that part of that question. But the other part is that the need for sport-specific training is important. You know, if you're in hotel quarantine for 2 weeks and the day that you get out, you're meant to be stepping into a heat, then how you move your body has to be so relative and sharp to your chosen sport. So in the instance of surfing, you're surfing on an unstable surface, right? Water and a surfboard. So how can you keep that nervous system sharp enough within your training, or what you do in quarantine in this example, that you are just as ready to go surfing and step into that heat as you were before you stepped into hotel quarantine to the best of your abilities, right?
Right.
So in that instance, what good is, you know, training that's not as specific in a nervous system way?
Like running on a treadmill for a surfer. I've seen that. Yeah. And I'm like, it makes no sense that you're doing that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's no carryover whatsoever, even from a fitness perspective.
Absolutely none.
I can tell you first and foremost, being a triathlete, that my run fitness wouldn't carry over to my swim fitness.
I've learned that the hard way. Not that I was ever a runner before, but swim fitness is completely different to anything you can do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So making it as specific to the environment of surfing as possible. You know, if you're a professional and you know you're going to be in quarantine, then you've got to try and source a Swiss ball and a Bosu.
Bongo board.
Tools and things to keep your mind sharp. You know, I do a lot of juggling with people in terms of hand-eye coordination. So those things become more and more important.
Does visualizing become a very important factor then when we're talking about athletes who are in hotel quarantine?
Yeah, totally. I think it was Paul who, I don't know who the source of this is, so I'm just going from word to word, but a golfer who spent time in jail. He spent a year in jail through the story, but every day he would visualize his home golf course. And he was, you know, from what I heard, a 5 handicap golfer. So quite a
good golfer.
Good golfer. You know, to get to 5's quite tough, right? He would see your line of work. But he would visualize his course, and he would visualize the movement of his swing every single day. And through that muscle memory, driven from his central nervous system, driven from his mind and his thought patterns, mm-hmm. when he got out of jail, his first game of golf, he played to his handicap.
Wow.
He played to five because every day he'd
lived it.
Because he lived it. And what brought him peace and what brought him into a sense of love was visualizing the game that he loved. So the fascination with that is the power of our mind and the power of our visualization. And just to share a story on that, I had a race where I really used the power of that. I really stepped into Joe Dispenza's work. Mm-hmm. And every day I would meditate and visualize the outcome of this race, all the way to what the weather was doing, where my family was, where my coach was. I visualized my coach being in the box, and I visualized that final 200 meters, giving him a high five. My parents were over here. The line was here. The cameras were there. It was flashing. It was drizzling. And I was also next to who was an idol of mine. He was an idol athlete. I really looked up to him, but it was up to me and him in a sprint finish. And I visualized that sprint finish with him. And every day I would visualize that. I would be riding up Tomiwin Mountain here on the Gold Coast with tears running down my eyes because I was just so emotionally attached to this outcome.
You've got that visceral feeling of it.
Oh, so visceral. I'd be running through Broadbeach, you know, a place that's so busy.
Yep.
And I wouldn't even see people because I was so in my head. I was at the last 300 meters of the race. That's where I was. I wasn't Broadbeach with other people around.
No.
And I would have tears running down my face because I was so visceral about the experience of coming across the line, how I did. And because I did that day in, day out, what happened was that I got to the last K of the race, 1K to go, and it clicked. It was drizzling side by side with my idol. I was approaching. I could see my family here. I got into the point, which was I knew the race so well. I knew the running leg so well that there was this pole, which I would say that's where I kick, that's where I go.
Mm.
And everything was playing out like deja vu.
Yeah.
One of the moments was, there's the pole. There's that pole. That's where I go. That's where I go in my dream. That's where I kick and go.
That's
for
your
it.
Trigger. Yep.
And so when I seen that pole, I was like, that's where I go. And that's when I went. And that's when I created the gap on my idol, went across the line. Oh, sorry, before that, I high-fived my coach, just how I'd visualized it.
Yeah, wow.
You know, I'd given the yes to my family over there, gone across the line, and you know, the cameras and the visualization of the tape. And I went across the line just how I'd visualized, which was, you know, two peace signs.
Yeah.
So it was literally deja vu, that experience for me. It was like a glitch in the system, a glitch in the matrix.
The matrix, I know exactly what you mean.
Is what I experienced that day. And that was another grounding experience of the power of the mind, another experience of how important it is to do this mental work and how powerful visualization can be. But not just visualization, feeling, attaching the emotion to it as well.
Sweat it and like you said, cry it and live all of that experience, that sensory experience, even though it's only, when I say only, it's not only, it's created by your mind, but it's an incredibly powerful tool. So you can physiologically bring those emotions and bring those changes within your body out, like you're running that race because you've got the power to do it. And I think that's one thing that I learned recently about, I've avoided listening to or watching Wim Hof's work up until recently, even though I've done the breath work and I've learned through other methodologies how to breathe, through pools, through lots of other things, but doing cold water immersions. But that he says in his book, and he says he's not extraordinary. He's a normal person. He just believes and he knows because he does it. And he does that visceral thing where he increases his body temperature from the inside out by switching on the HP axis within his high, like within that hormonal system. So it's possible to do. You just have to believe that you can do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And yeah, when you have the experience of doing it, it's no doubt, right? You can share again from what is a subjective experience, but you know, sharing it from that perspective, you know, it's so real. It can be so real if
yeah. And so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. But you've got to have a big enough dream to also drive that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. What is it about your job that you think the world should know about? Because I know there's so many aspects of what I do in my coaching that I shout from the rooftops about how wonderful and how awesome it is. But is there one thing that you can think of that people might not necessarily understand about the way you coach that they should know?
Well, I think through, you know, our discussion so far, I've painted a picture to the holistic approach that I'm taking, and that life, performance, the body, it's we can't compartmentalize things. We can to begin with, to understand something.
Yep.
But eventually there needs to be emergence of it all to be able to put the map together, you know.
Yeah.
One of my philosophies in my line of in my work is that if somebody comes in, I say that they have their own unique software. They have a blueprint to who they are. And just like software in a computer can get certain bugs or certain glitches, it's my job to help find what those glitches are.
Yeah.
And if we can understand where those glitches lay, whether it be in the physical aspect, whether it's in within your consciousness, wherever it may be, observing where those glitches are is important for us to be able to work to resolve and bring your software back to its original blueprint.
Yeah.
Take you back to your potential and your blueprint.
So, because we're all born with that, aren't we?
Because we're all born with that. We just get conditioned and layered upon all sorts of
different... Or traumatized or injured or, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I would share with people. Is that holistic approach is to that, that we need to take that approach if we want to reach our potential.
Absolutely. Have you got anything else going on in your coaching at the moment that you'd like to let people know about?
At the moment, I've got...
You do any workshops? Yeah.
Yeah, do certain workshops. We've also... in the works of our own space that has a bathhouse and spa.
I didn't know whether I was allowed to mention it or not, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got that and then, we're continuing our work on the holistic working out aspect of things as well. So, yeah, that's a big project that's... one idea that's cultivating lots of people in a really exciting way. So, yeah, stay tuned on that journey.
So people can find you on social media to follow that journey?
Yep, follow me on social media, Taylor Cecil. And, you can follow that journey there. And, you can get to see what I'm all about and what I take clients through and some of the different facets to my coaching.
I'm very excited for that. Are you going to have any food-based stuff in the new centre or not, or is that just going to stay down at Byron?
That'll stay down in our Byron location.
Yeah, very cool. Do you want to just talk about that quickly, because we hadn't touched on that?
Yeah, so we have our Kira site, and then we've also got it's called Native State is the name of our company, and that's also growing in Byron Bay. But within Byron Bay, anyone can have an experience relative to our lockdowns
of
Bhavana, which is an organic cooking school. Yeah. run by Joe Rushton and Greta Smith. And those two beautiful ladies, run lots of different workshops for nutrition and getting to know, understanding the gut and its relationship with all other facets of our life. So yes, check out Bhavana for those sorts of experiences too.
Very cool. I cannot wait for the borders to open and eventually that Victorians are allowed back in the rest of Australia so I can get back up and see you guys.
Yeah, awesome.
Thanks for being here today, Taylor.
Thanks, Tanya. Thanks for the chat.
You're welcome.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Amongst the Waves. I would love for you to leave your review on Apple Podcasts. Reviews help increase our rankings, let more people listen to the podcast, and share the love.